so the apartment search has begun. My final day at my current job is coming up, so I've started looking in earnest for an apartment in Los Angeles, which is always a nightmare, but it'll work out. And you know, it is important to be earnest, as they say, or to be Ernie, as I call it. Although I think it's also important to be Bert. Get it? Ernie and Bert? What a terrible joke. I'm sorry. And even if for the first year the apartment isn't ideal, that's okay. I can always find another place. The point was to get back to Los Angeles. I have to be flexible. But of course, I'm a bit stressed out, but not too bad. But I am pretty anxious, really. To sum it up, to quote one of my favorite lines from the John Hughes movie Weird Science from 1985, where Robert Downey Jr., who is one of the dickhead jerks in the movie, is in our nerd hero's bedroom, and they are showing Robert Downey Jr. how they were able to summon up Kelly LeBrock. So they're doing this ritual, they have a computer on, they all have bras on their heads, there's lights and crazy wind and mayhem occurring, and Robert Downey Jr. shouts, "I'm shitting in my pants!" So that's about where I am right now. Luckily, I wear Depends. I'm just kidding, I don't. Yet. All right, let's do this.
You are my density.
So we must mention a couple of recent passings. Just the absolute legend, Gene Hackman, recently died. Unknown cause, kind of, but he was pretty old and likely fell and died. But he's just one of those massive movie stars like Jack Nicholson, Clint Eastwood level. Gene Hackman was, you know, kind of a normal-looking schlub, 6'2", just a goddamn man, though. Not quite as imposing as George C. Scott, but he's in that ballpark. Gene Hackman just kind of seemed like the guy you wouldn't want to fuck with. And Hackman has so many movies. I'm an absolute sucker for the noir detective down on their luck characters movies. And I love Night Moves, directed by Arthur Penn from 1975. I think I mentioned it before. It also has a really young Melanie Griffith. In fact, I'm sure I mentioned it. But yeah, Gene Hackman plays a private eye in, of course, Los Angeles, who is hired to find a runaway teenage daughter. Hackman's character, Harry Mosby, is an ex-football player whose personal life is falling apart. I mean, 1970s, Los Angeles, detective, you can't get more up my alley. And I just grew up loving the amazing and fun Superman the movie, directed by the man Richard Donner, with Christopher Reeve as Superman, Marlon Brando as Superman's father, and just a pitch-perfect villainous performance by Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor. Hackman is funny, over-the-top, evil, and just like a perfect example of how a comic book villain should be portrayed. All of these modern-day movies, like even the more recent Superman or Batman movies, are so dour, so serious, so dark, literally and figuratively. Comic books are fun because they're kind of silly, sometimes, you know, kind of bright, garish, sometimes ridiculous, but the best ones are fun. So give me the original Sam Raimi's Spider-Man or Tim Burton's Batman over any of this other bullshit. Although as far as recent movies go, I have mentioned too many times that I love James Mangold's Logan with Hugh Jackman. So rest in peace, Gene Hackman. They don't make them like you anymore. And another massive passing this week was the classy singer Roberta Flack. She died. And man, she was just pure talent. She didn't get too mixed up into the bullshit and the fame. She just kind of delivered the goods on her own terms. She paid her dues playing in clubs in Washington, D.C., and eventually Clint Eastwood heard her rendition of The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, and he put the song in his great film Play Misty for Me, and that propelled her to flame. Propelled her to fame. And honestly, I've never been a huge fan of that song. I mean, talk about glacially paced. But she followed it up with just one of the great songs of all time, Killing Me Softly, with his song from 1973. It was originally sang by Lori Lieberman, but Roberta took it and kind of gave it her own spin, and man, it's so goddamn good. I remember there was a kind of a crap version of Killing Me Softly in 1988 by Al B. Schurer. But let's try and forget about that, why don't we? Anyway, go listen to the Roberta Flack version, but here's a little bit of Killing Me Softly.
I heard he sang a good song. I heard he had a style. And so I came to see him to listen for a while. And there he was, this young boy, a stranger to my eyes, strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
And like I said, Roberta Flack seemed just like a genuine, talented, no-bullshit performer whose gifts were undeniable. I read a great little quote from her in one of her obituaries. She was always kind of unpretentious and real. And she once said that when she's performing, "I want everybody to see me as I am. Your voice cracks. Okay, darling, you go right on and keep giving it what you've got left. And the audience ignores it and goes right along with you. I found out the way to get myself through to people is just to unzip myself and let everything hang out," which is kind of just the way to do it. We all have flaws. That's what makes us unique. The few times I've really nailed an audition or did well in an acting class is when I'm completely being myself. You take the role or part and you do it like you would do it. There's only one you. Don't pretend. Don't act. Just say the lines like you would. And if they like you, they'll like you. And if not, well, fuck them. Let them pick someone else. And we spoke about the tragedy of Frankie Valli in The Five Seasons last week, but there's a pretty funny classic old Saturday Night Live skit from 1984 where Eddie Murphy plays Clarence Walker, who's a disgruntled saxophonist who was claimed to have been the fifth Beatle before being kicked out in 1963. He's being interviewed on a talk show by Joe Piscopo, and Eddie Murphy is so good in this. He's pissed off and funny, and he says, "Yeah, man, I was ripped off by the whole group. And the whole group got a behind kicking coming to them when I see them. I've been looking for them boys since 1963. Clarence said he has proof that he was in the band. He plays a recording of "I Want to Hold Your Hand" that he says was the original recording. And it has like Eddie Murphy's voice like dubbed on top of it. So at the beginning, before they start singing, he's like, "Ha, come on, y'all." And then they go, "Oh, yeah, man, tell you something, man. I think you'll understand." He says the band was originally called the Clarences. It's just prime, young, and hungry Eddie Murphy at the height of his powers. Check it out. And speaking of badly dubbed Beatles songs, many years ago I was at a holiday dinner for the editing company I worked at. It was a fancy little farm-to-table type joint. And me and my man, the before-mentioned Buckley, who used to be an advertising rep, which is just an awful job. Anyway, me and Buckley were at this dinner, and they had a little gem lettuce salad. I think it was maybe the first time I'd heard of gem lettuce. And for some reason, after dinner, I was saying Jim Lettuce in kind of a Beatles voice. And I was a little drunk, so I was like, well, let's do a little tweaking of a Beatles song. So I chose Strawberry Fields Forever and badly inserted some lyrics about Jim Lettuce. But it's kind of funny. I kind of framed the song almost like Jim Lettuce was a drug, and the Beatles were about to run out of Jim Lettuce, and they start freaking out. Here's that.
"Hey, where'd you put the Jim Lettuce?"
"Oh, it's right over there by the strawberries." "Oh, that's lovely."
"Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
They taste like hearts of romaine.
Nothing is real.
They take away all my pain.
Nothing to get hung about.
Strawberries and gin lettuce.
We're almost out of gin lettuce. What are we gonna do? We've got to find some more, that's for sure. Ah, it's a hearty lettuce. It's a small, robust romaine.
Small.
It's a sweet flavor.
It's known as baby
it's
butter
like
lettuce.
Lots of romaine.
Baby butter
small.
Lettuce.
It's diminutive.
It's easy to grow.
Baby butter lettuce.
It's ideal for individual salads.
Okay, another quick Jack Nicholson-style quote. Jack is at dinner with a woman. He looks a little frustrated, and he says, "You know, somehow you're even worse than I imagined. And I have a really fucking big imagination." Okay, here's a joke or a humorous scene or maybe just something straight-up terrible. You be the judge. So the gag is that there's an auctioneer, and he's calling on people who are bidding, but he's calling them with like kind of an odd, snide personal comment. Something like, "Okay, 300 to Mr. Comeover in the back row, 325 to the woman here who looks like she hasn't slept or bathed in a week, and we have a winner, ladies and gentlemen, the gentleman here in front who kind of looks like an ugly Matt Damon." Speaking of Matt Damon, he starred in the 2011 film Contagion about a global pandemic. The film was ahead of its time. It's a good film directed by the prolific, sometimes hits and sometimes misses, Steven Soderbergh. He directed one of my favorite little noirs, the previously mentioned 1995's The Underneath, about a gambling addict who gets mixed up in a robbery gone wrong, just with a crackerjack cast: Peter Gallagher, Elizabeth Shue, William Faulkner, Joe Don Baker, and Shelley Duvall. It's a little hard to find, but try and track it down. But speaking of Steven Soderbergh, he has a new thriller streaming. It's like a ghost story called Presence. It's kind of psychological horror. It's the perfect length. It's an hour and 25 minutes. It's focused on a teenage girl whose family has just moved into a new house. And it seems like there's some kind of, well, presence in the house. The family has some serious issues. They're dysfunctional as hell. It's kind of a slow burn, but it kind of sticks the landing. And interestingly, the movie is basically told from the point of view of the ghost or the presence. It takes a little getting used to, but it slowly just starts to work. You probably can predict the ending if you pay close enough attention. And it's not a perfect movie, but it's pretty damn good. And as you know, I'm always talking about movies. People always ask me why I love Los Angeles so much, and I say because of the movies. Driving around and seeing places where movies were shot, or where actors died, or just iconic Los Angeles streets. Just like walking around Los Angeles, I feel like I'm in a movie. And my life for quite a while has been movies, music, supplements, exercise, and my mom, not necessarily in that order. Oh, and alcohol, but I'm slowly working on that one. And even though I love movies, I've seen so many that I always dread the question, what's your favorite movie? Or what's your favorite director? I mean, there are great movies I only want to see once, and there's goofy movies that I often rewatch. So sometimes it's not like the best cinematically done movie I like, it's just something that has an energy or is imperfect and just brings me enjoyment. For some reason, I love William Friedkin's 1995 corny thriller Jade with David Caruso, Chaz Palminteri, Linda Fiorentino, and Michael Biehn. It's just over the top, ridiculous script, and fun as hell. And briefly, I saw another sign. This one is kind of lame, but I have 3 days left at work, and I pack my lunch in like these old school paper bags. It looked like I didn't have enough bags, but I actually had exactly 3 lunch bags left for my 3 remaining days of work. Coincidence? I think not. And either way, I figure it's better to be hopeful and delusional than realistic and pessimistic. Okay, let's finish with a couple work anecdotes. So a woman I work with went out with her boyfriend and friends, and he proposed to her. And she was kind of unprepared, and they took a picture of her. And she said it was like, oh, a horrible picture. And you know when people usually say that, it's like, oh, okay, let me see. No, it's not that bad. But I looked at this picture of her, and I was like, actually, Jesus, that is a horrible picture of you. I mean, the lighting was dreadful, terrible shadows, her hair looked awful, and it was legitimately horrendous. And it was so bad that like even like a month later, just randomly out of nowhere, I said to her, Jesus, that was a horrible photo. And to close, sometimes I hear stuff at the psych hospital that just guts me, something that's so human, so genuine, and kind of so tragic. So this one fairly psychotic guy was being visited by his dad. And his dad was getting ready to leave, and the patient said, can you stay a little longer? And it just kind of stopped me in my tracks. It's like this guy with mental illness longing for a little more of a visit with his father. And man, I'm sure the father is exhausted, and he has to leave. And some of the most heroic people I have seen have been parents whose children suffer from these serious psychiatric conditions. And these people are in and out of psychiatric hospitals, if not for years, but maybe for their whole lives. And their parents don't give up. They visit. They try to support them. The patients get better. They leave the hospital, sometimes for good. But often the patient stops taking their medications or they start some other shit, some other drugs or whatever, and it's back to square one. They end up at the hospital again. Often when someone is discharging, you wish them the best, but part of you knows things are going to go haywire at some point. And while the person with the mental illness is suffering, man, can you imagine the family? So I honestly salute those family members who don't give up. They support their kid through the miseries and the successes. Because even though I'm sure it's taxing and so exhausting to have a child with mental illness, it's like, man, that's your kid. Yes, it sucks, but you have to do your best and not give up. Easier said than done, I completely understand. But sometimes you see a family member that's so supportive and noble that it's almost saint-like. And briefly, back to the phrase, can you stay a little longer? I mean, that's about as perfect a summation of the human condition as I can think of. I mean, can you stay a little longer? It's the point. That's what you're saying to your loved ones, your friends, your lovers. There's such a sweet desperation to the phrase. It's like, please don't leave, not just yet. Because at some point, everyone leaves, whether the end of a friendship or the end of a relationship or the end of a life. So it's like, put down your fucking phone, put away your computer, and just spend time with the people you love. Because that's what matters in the end.